Well, I want to thank Jesse for doing such a good job last week. I listened to his talk and was encouraged by it, and so he'll get to do it again, I'm sure. Thank you. I'm going to sit here so I can look at the slide with you, and I don't have to do that. Sue has a nickname for me. Well, she has a lot of nicknames for me. But the one I like the best, and she's had this nickname for me about as long as she's known me. The nickname is Mr. Physics. Now, Sue, why do you call me Mr. Physics?
You do not understand physics.
Because I do not understand physics.
Right.
Yeah.
Simple things.
Simple things, yeah. One day, I was coming home from work in Peoria one evening, and as I was coming up 150 to turn onto Sunset Lake Road from Carlock, I saw in the eastern sky a double rainbow that was just pure and strong. And so I beat it home thinking, don't go away, don't go away, don't go away. And I pulled into the drive, and I ran, everybody in the car, everybody in the car. And so I get everybody in the car, and we're going, and Sue says, no, and she's in the car. This isn't going to work. I said, we're going to see the end of this rainbow. We're going to get right to the end of this rainbow. I was so excited thinking that we could walk out into the end of the rainbow and have it just flow its colors over us. And we would be somehow transported. And it was that night I learned that you can't do that. That rainbows are different than... We didn't chase it 20 miles. Well, we were past Tawanda, but... We're not 20 miles one way. I mean, yeah, yeah. Well, we got over by Lexington, I think. The rainbow is a fabulous gift. And we're going to get to that at the end of our talk today. And it's just funny how these expressions of God, we don't fully, I don't fully understand. But I sure did appreciate it. And then, and Mr. Physics says, ready? Mr. Physics. I just like that slide, so that's what we're using. I just think it's artsy and neat. Last time we talked, we talked about how the story of the flood, I mean, this entire epoch of the flood is the law of God, and it's the gospel of God. It's both law and gospel. And the fact is, if we're wise, when we read the Old Testament, especially, we will look for the gospel. And when we read the New Testament, especially, we'll look for the law. And when we read Romans, we see this very deep, and I will say complicated, discussion of the law and the gospel. But I think we can see it in story form, and that helps us take it in a little bit better when we look at the flood. And so, let's be thinking about that as we go through this today. Now, I'm going to tell you something. Sometimes I have what I'm going to share with you, and I don't tell you. But today I'm going to tell you that I have a fire in my belly today. It's not Mexican food or anything like that. It's the study of this, the study of these chapters of Genesis, puts a fire in my belly, and the fire is about you, and the fire is about to what degree are you taking this seriously? to what degree are you even struggling with it? And I would love it if you came up to me some Sunday and said, well, I really heard what you said, but have you considered this? It reminds me of when I was teaching Sunday school in Congreville. I think I taught for 13 years in a row adult Sunday school. And it was 30 to 40 people every week, and there were people in their 90s, there were people in their 30s in this group. And I began to realize that they were just all on automatic, that I would teach, they would just, that's nice. You've studied it, we haven't accepted. And so one Sunday, I had a fire in my belly, and I said, you know something, folks? I think that I could stand up here and preach Mormon doctrine, and you would accept it. And that's no go. That's no good. That's no good. I want you to be Bereans. The Bereans, we're told in the book of Acts, were a very faithful people because they heard the apostles, and then they took what the apostles said, and they went to the scriptures. And they said, does what the apostles said match up with what the Old Testament says? And of course it did, and of course they were converted. My concern for us is that this story, and I think Tate said it well, that this story is too familiar. And we certainly haven't preached about it a lot, but it's just familiar. It's just Noah and the flood. And we don't allow it to shake us. And if you're here today, and you're here because this is your church, and you don't really have a hunger for what God might teach you, I'm going to ask you to shake that up and to open your heart. You know, I know that there was some great disappointment when the first candidate we had wasn't called. I know that there was great disappointment. And I've even sensed from some of you that you just kind of turned away. And I understand that. But I also understand this, that the person God has for us is walking the earth, and we will know it when this person comes forth. And I think we will embrace and rejoice. And what I want you to do is not to go into a shell, but to just keep praying and hoping and understand that God is so desirous of giving us the right person. Daniel, who left, he's really mad at me. Daniel, every Sunday, is my secretary, and he helps me, and he'll always say, well, we have a new pastor yet? And I'll say, Daniel, I'm out of the loop on this, but he walks the earth. He walks the earth. So I'm going to ask you to, you know, and some of you are there, you've heard me for so many years that it's like, well, what's new? I'm going to go through the motions, but I'm not really tuning in. I'm going to ask you to tune in today. I'm going to ask you to understand that it isn't me. You don't come here because of me. You come here because of Jesus. And Jesus has something to teach us. And that teaching us, especially about this story, helps us form how we deal with life. Remember when we started this series, I said, we need Genesis 1 through 11 because without it, we don't have any foundation for our lives. And there are folks who say, you know, I like the Bible pretty well, but I can't accept that stuff. I can't accept Genesis 1 through 11. And I think that's a sad compromise. And so there's a fire in my belly, and the fire in my belly is that we understand that the story of Noah and the flood has never ended. Do you understand that? That to the characters in the Old Testament who reference it, and to Jesus who references it, this is a living narrative of something that actually happened. and of something that is effective in our lives, even today. I want to start not in Genesis, but we're going to go back to something we've read before, but it's worth reading again. It's 2 Peter 3. So if you have a Bible, please turn to 2 Peter 3. This chapter is headlined with "The Day of the Lord Will Come." Is that true? Is the day of the Lord going to come? What's one of the strongest supports for that we have? It's the story of the flood. Because the flood was a day of the Lord. It was a season of the Lord. It was not an accidental climate disaster. It was God in control of everything. And it was judgment. Let's begin chapter 3, verse 4. They will say, now who are they? They are the scoffers. Are there any scoffers in our culture today? Yeah, big time. Can I tell you something? There have always been scoffers. Now, I think that this passage is saying it's going to get more scoffy. It's going to get scoffier. And I think it has. They will say, "Where is the promise of his coming? For ever since the fathers fell asleep, all things are continuing as they were from the beginning of creation." And as I said one time before, I've heard people, and I accept this, I've heard people say, this is a statement about the nature of the cosmos that would fit the evolutionary mindset here. That life goes on without any intervention by God. And we say as Christians, well, that's just not so. If that's the case, friends, why would you ever pray? Why would you ever pray if things are just, it's a clock and the clock runs and nothing ever affects the clock? See, there's something inside us that says, that isn't so. I must believe in a God who is alive and responding and connected to the prayers of his people. Let's continue here. "For they deliberately overlooked this fact, that the heavens existed long ago, and the earth was formed out of water and through water by the word of God." And isn't that so in keeping with Genesis 1? That's Genesis 1, just put in other words. "And that by means of these, the world that then existed was deluged." Deluged with water. "And that by means of these, the world that then existed was deluged with water and perished. But by the same word, the heavens and earth that now exist are stored up for fire, being kept until the day of judgment and destruction of the ungodly." It's good to hear Seth. I'm glad to hear him expressing himself. Peter, often wrong Peter when he was walking with Jesus, volatile Peter, is now someone that we can look at and say, you're a new man. You are a changed person because you have taken things out of your own hands and you've put them where they belong, and that's in the hands of God. And what we're talking about here is Peter saying, he did it before with the flood, with the deluge. He's going to do it again. Now, we're going to go to Genesis now, and we're going to read about that, and we're going to see what do we have to take away. Because, friends, we don't do this to have a history lesson. Even our Reformation talk the other night, I spent 40 hours, maybe, reading and preparing for that. I don't do that to give a history lesson. I do that because we need to be molded by these things. We need to understand that God continues to be at work. And I don't know if any of you get emails from Desiring God. Do any of you hear from Desiring God? Yeah. Did you get the one this week about the new offer of a Reformation series that's like 6 minutes a day? And you know what it is? Luther was not alone. Well, friends, that is what our next talk is about. The people, the characters of the Reformation. That God was at work. These guys didn't know each other. But God was doing things that meant that the movement took hold and changed the world. Now, I want to go back to the day of the flood. And let's say that it's about year 20 in the construction of the ark. How long did it take the ark to be built? 100 years. So let's say it's about year 20. And Noah is faithfully working away. Do you think Noah had any friends? I think he probably did. He found favor with the Lord. That's the kind of person that often attracts people because they're winsome. We talk about them in terms of missionary work as they're people of peace. And Noah was that kind of person. And I can imagine about year 20, he's got all this wood laid out, and they're still gathering stuff, and he's got his sons helping him, and maybe he even hired some help. We don't know that. But I can imagine that some of his buddies were saying, Noah, you started this, and when you started this, my grandson was a little guy, and now he's married and he's got kids. Noah. Okay, how about year 40? Noah, my grandson, is now 45, and he's got grandkids. How about year 60? Or year 80. Do you think that there were any scoffers in Noah's day? You bet there were. And what was life like then for those folks? I will say that those folks were classic hedonists. Now, what do I mean by that? They're people who are living according to the pursuit of pleasure. Now, I like the phrase that comes from Desiring God, from John Piper, and that is to be a Christian hedonist. To find pleasure in the author of pleasure, in the source of pleasure, real lasting pleasure, and that's God. So if you want to call me a Christian hedonist, I'm trying. And I would say thank you. But a hedonist without Christ, without God as the center, is a pursuer of pleasure. And we have to believe that that is what was happening in Noah's day. And so that Noah's work becomes increasingly ridiculous. Are you kidding me? That man has been building that massive structure, and these animals are coming in, and they're feeding them, and they're gathering hay, and they're gathering grain, and they're doing all this. They're crazy. This preparation for something they're talking about is crazy. Scoffing. Let's turn to Genesis 8. Well, the craziness turned into, first it started to rain, and oh, did you notice that over in those fields there's water coming up? And it just kept coming, and it kept coming, and people moved to high ground, and high ground was not enough, and the flood took those things that had the breath of life, we're told. Friends, God is not mocked. There needs to be a fire in your belly that says, I don't fully understand this, because that's the truth, but I do understand that there is a God, that he's holy. What does that mean about him? It means that he is unimaginably perfect. Doesn't mean he's grumpy. Let's get the view of the grumpy old guy looking at the world and pointing fingers out of our mind, because that's not the case. When God sees hedonism that is not embracing his creation and the way he's made things, he says, that is so lost. That is such a lost approach that we are going to stop this. And so he does. He stops it. Look at verse 21 in chapter 8. When the Lord smelled the pleasing aroma, this is of Noah's sacrifice, the Lord said in his heart, okay, friends, anthropomorphism. Remember that? Remember that in the program? Giving God human-like traits. Why? So that we can understand them. But this, the Lord said in his heart, yes, but let's understand that this is not God informing himself of anything. This is God receiving the sacrifice with appreciation and even joy. And he says, I will never again curse the ground because of man. That's an important statement there too, by the way. The ground had been cursed. You recall that. At the fall, the ground was cursed. And he says, I'll never do that again. So the curse of the ground is lifted. For the intention of man's heart is evil from his youth. Now, that's an important phrase, isn't it? Because that phrase, we have to ask a question. We have to ask a question. That little guy Seth there is just precious and just beautiful, and we're just so excited that Seth is here. Does he have a heart that's, as we watch him grow, it's going to have evil intent? I invite you to go to the Harshbargers when Seth is three. Two. Well, yeah. Yeah. And you know how I know these things? Not only did we raise kids, not only are we raising grandkids, I remember being really little and just loving, and I still kind of revel in this nonsense. I love to start fires. I loved it. I loved fire. And I knew it was wrong, and I burned things up. But man, if I could start a fire, that was power. That was bad. I did bad things. Neither will I ever again strike down every living creature as I have done. I'm not going to do this again. While the earth remains. Okay, so when I say that this story is alive now, here you can begin to see this. While the earth remains. We're here. It's remaining. Seed time and harvest. Oh, if you live in town, please go out in the country. Please be careful, but please watch harvest. It is a joy to watch harvest. The other night I was bringing the girls, our granddaughters, back to Becky's house, and it was dark, and there was harvesting going on right along 150. There were two combines and two giant gravity boxes behind giant tractors, and you could just see the lights and the outline, and it was kind of surreal. And Abby says, Baba, that's beautiful. And I wanted to give her $100. As I didn't have it, and don't tell her that, okay? But the point is this. It was beautiful. It's harvest. And it is the promises of God being experienced by people. cold and heat. Summer and winter, day and night shall not cease. We live that, don't we? We live the seasons. There's much speculation by scholars that there were not seasons before the flood, and now there are seasons. Okay, pick up with chapter 9 now. And as I read this, I want you to ask yourselves a question and be honest about your answer. So just be thinking about that. And God blessed Noah and his sons and said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth." Now, that had been said before, hadn't it? But that is the heart of God. "The fear of you and the dread of you shall be upon every beast of the earth and upon every bird of the heavens, upon everything that creeps on the ground and all the fish of the sea. Into your hand they are delivered." So this goes back to what God had said in the initial creation account, that man was to have dominion over the creation. "Every moving thing that lives shall be food for you. And as I gave you the green plants, I give you everything. But you shall not eat flesh with its life, that is, its blood. And for your lifeblood, I will require a reckoning. From every beast I will require it, and from man, from his fellow man, I will require a reckoning for the life of man." What does he mean by that? He's going to tell us. "Whoever sheds the blood of man, by man shall his blood be shed. For God made man in his own image." What is this? What is this understanding? And I will tell you that this is a much debated issue, and I will tell you that I'm not sure where I fall on this issue. But at this time, if someone took another person's life, their life was to be taken also. Now, can you think of any reason why that was a good idea? Well, I can. That's about the strongest deterrent you could ever have to not kill somebody. Wait a minute, they emptied the ketchup. They got to go. Oh, you mean I got to go too? I'll go without ketchup. It's that deep, Brandy. It is that deep. Brandy and I both love ketchup. Yeah, I know. We both. "And you be fruitful and multiply, teem on the earth and multiply in it. Then God said to Noah and to his sons with him, 'Behold, I establish my covenant with you and your offspring after you, and with every living creature that is with you, the birds, the livestock, and every beast of the earth with you. As many as come out of the ark, it is for every beast of the earth. I establish my covenant with you that never again shall all flesh be cut off by the waters of the flood, and never again shall there be a flood to destroy the earth.'" Covenant of God. "I promise as the sovereign of everything that what you just experienced, you will not experience again." Are we living in this story? Is this story still operative? Yes, this story is still operative, and we can know, as I say in the program, you could be living in Houston, and it seems like all the world is a flood, but you know that that is not going to happen, because God has said, "I will not do that again." This, and God said, "This is the sign of the covenant that I make between me and you and every living creature that is with you for all future generations." Again, we are in the story. We are a future generation. "I have set my bow in the cloud, and it shall be a sign of the covenant between me and the earth." Now, I think it's very probable that before the flood, the atmosphere was such that there weren't rainbows. It is thought that before the flood, there was kind of a greenhouse of the atmospheric surroundings, and that you didn't have direct sunlight to the degree that we do now. But when all that dried up, now we had the possibility, and Mrs. Physics will explain this to you if you want to know, the possibility of the spectrum of light being shown when the sun goes through rain. It's amazing, isn't it? Isn't it amazing that when sun goes through rain, we get this beautiful thing? It's otherworldly, this thing. And it's always fabulous. We still live in this. When I bring clouds over the earth and the bow is seen in the clouds, I will remember my covenant that is between me and you and every living creature of all flesh, and the water shall never again become a flood to destroy all flesh. When the bow is in the clouds, I will see it and remember. Anthropomorphic. The everlasting covenant between God and every living creature of all flesh that is on the earth. God said to Noah, "This is the sign of the covenant that I have established between me and all flesh that is on the earth." Well, I hope to start with, we understand that we live in this day, that we live in the post-flood covenant, and that we must understand that the common grace of God flows over all the earth. Yes, there are floods. Yes, there are hurricanes and typhoons and all kinds of tropical storms, but nothing like the earth-changing flood. And we live in that. Now, so here's the question. Be honest about our answer. This flood happened. That was a picture taken at the time of the flood, just recently discovered. I have this question. How often do you think about Noah? How often do you think about the flood and the promise that God had made? Let me ask you this. If you're all very understandably concerned about the world today, and we pray every Wednesday night about North Korea, because that seems like that is a tinder point that could be set off and cause tremendous destruction, and it's true, do you ever think of Noah and the flood? And if you do, I invite you to recognize who was behind the flood. God was behind the flood. What did we read in 2 Peter? That the earth will be destroyed by fire. I don't know. Nobody knows when that is going to happen. I do know that Jesus said this. When all this begins to happen, it's like birth pangs that get closer and closer and closer and closer. And then, boom, there's going to be a new reality. And he says this about the new reality. If I had not come and put a stop to this, no one would have survived. So that calamity is global. That calamity is beyond anything we've ever experienced. And friends, that calamity could be asteroids. It could be sun flares. It could be anything like that. Or it could be nuclear. I don't know. But I do think it's important that we understand that we live in a day where this is possible. When we have the ability to destroy the earth many, many, many times over that we have, how often, if you are concerned about the future of the earth, do you remember Noah? And what, when you remember it, what does this entire story teach us about the character of God? I think it teaches us law and gospel. It teaches us that God is not mocked. Whatever a man sows, that will he also reap. But it also teaches us that God so loved the world that he gave himself, his only begotten Son. He gave God that if we would trust him, if we would come to him in our confusion and brokenness and say, I don't have this figured out. I believe you do. Save me. He will save us. That's what it requires. How about the condition of mankind? In the book of Daniel, it says that near the end, knowledge will increase greatly, and people will travel greatly, and they'll go to and fro greatly. Maybe it's going to get a lot more than it is now, but boy, friends, even in my lifetime, it has changed dramatically. The condition of mankind is no different than it was then. And we just have to understand that. And why is it important to understand that? Because we need to understand that we need a Savior. We need Jesus. He is our provision. He has come. He has called us. We must answer the call. The necessities for shalom. And shalom is this, it's something beyond just peace. It's something beyond having no conflict. It's this union between God and man. We need that. We need it. And so God has given us his promise. As we prepare for communion, Derek and Chris are going to serve communion. I want us to take inventory of our souls, take inventory of the gospel. Understand that what we're doing here is a remembrance of what has saved us, the person who has saved us. Because this person is coming. He's coming on the earth. This is a special AV effect I created here. He's getting closer. And the earth will be on fire. And it's a frightening prospect. The earth will be very pixelated as well. Maybe you didn't understand that. The point is, friends, it's all true. There is a day coming. I don't know if I'll live to see it. I don't know if you'll live to see it. We might. It might happen this week. We don't know. I do know this, that when you meet someone and talk to someone who's not tired of being a Christian, who's not just going through motions of being a Christian, but who has come to the living Christ and who experiences in the living Christ joy. And that joy, the joy of Christ, becomes the joy of the person. When you meet that person, it's effective. It's really effective. Now today, I have fire in my belly. Because I'm not just going to stand here and shout platitudes. I want to tell you the way things really are. But I want to remind you that you live in God's covenant. You live in the covenant of a promise-keeping God. And for that, we can't even express the gratitude we should have. We're going to experience that now as we take communion. So guys, would you come up and lead us in communion?